Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today. Tomorrow's the day. A lot of Christians dread it. I'm going to be, in interest of full disclosure, I'm going to be completely honest with you all from the very outset. I remember happily those days running up and down the streets in the dark of night, late October, with my little costume on, going up and down our long block there in Dallas, Texas, trick-or-treating. As I got a little older, I was allowed to stray to the next block, and it was for kids, it was a boon. It was wonderful. The kids got to walk the streets now. The days of that kind of safety and security are long gone. But Halloween, it's a kind of a fond memory for me as a little kid, raised in a Christian household. And then, probably about the time I was really getting into the swing of it, my mom decided that Halloween was not something she wanted her boys doing. And it was forbidden from that point on. We found something else to do. Went to see a movie, did something like that. Things really changed. I can't say I really miss those latter years, but what is Halloween? Is it the devil's day with which Christians should have nothing to do? Is it a harmless secular holiday, just a time to eat candy and dress up? Gretchen Passantino joins us for the remainder of this hour to talk about Halloween. You can join us as well. 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE. It's Thursday, October the 30th. Tomorrow's Halloween. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Gretchen Passantino is co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California, co-author of an article titled, What About Halloween? Gretchen, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much, Todd, and just so that we'll make it very, very clear with all of your listeners, Thriller may be your favorite song, but it certainly isn't mine. I'll go for A Mighty Fortress Is Our God.
Well, this was Jeff's idea.
Far more godly and spiritual.
That was entirely Jeff's idea. So.
Okay. Well, you know, the song itself has a lot to commend it as far as a fictional story and being able to build anticipation and fear and, a good climax and resolution. The character of the singer leaves something to be desired.
Well, Gretchen, tune in tomorrow because we're going to be doing like a special Reformation Day on Friday, and we'll have a lot of A Mighty Fortress. And we, in fact, have a hymn study of A Mighty Fortress, all stanzas with Dr. Arthur Just in the last hour of tomorrow's program, which I'm
Excellent.
Sure you will enjoy.
Oh, I'm sure I will, just as I enjoyed your Old Testament interview just now. Such a fascinating topic. I'm teaching a seminary class right now on Old Testament history and the story of redemption. And the complexity and soundness of the Old Testament texts, and I say that in the plural because, of course, we're talking about 39 books, not just one, is so astounding. When you compare it to any other ancient literature, we have far more to commend it for its reliability, its historicity, and its truth-telling than any other piece of ancient literature or all the other ancient literature put together. And that's not even counting God's part in the whole thing.
Gretchen, since tomorrow is a day that a lot of Christians eschew, Halloween, is Halloween Satan's holiday? Is it a satanic day? About a minute and a half before our break.
I would have to say that there is no day that belongs to the devil. All days belong to God. He is the creator and the sustainer of everything. None of us could even take another breath, could even think another thought, the devil included, if God did not sustain our existence and give us the ability to do that. So all days belong to him, all places belong to him, all people, even those in rebellion against him, belong to him. He is the one who is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. We should never surrender any day, any celebration, or any person to the devil. The devil doesn't have that kind of power. Now, it is true that there are evil people and evil beings, some of whom are not human, demons, who will take advantage at any particular time or with any particular celebration or idea, twist it, turn it, make a counterfeit out of it, and use it as part of their rebellion against God. But I think the response of Christians to things like this is not to be afraid and hide and run away, but instead to stand firm in our faith and to use it as an opportunity to share the gospel, an opportunity to show that God is the one who is the author not only of life, but also of death. He's the one who determines when and how we die and where we will spend eternity. If we're on the right side in questions of life and death, then Halloween and every other holiday should be just as impervious to frightening us as any other day.
Gretchen Pasentino is our guest. I'd like to hear from our listeners on the issue of Halloween. It is coming up tomorrow. Do you and your family participate in Halloween activities? If so, why? If not, why not? What kind of participation are we talking about? Gretchen Pasentino is with us for the next half hour of the program. We'll be talking about Halloween, its history, and some of the very interesting historical roots that this holiday has. You can give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE. We're coming to you Thursday, October the 30th. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. 1-877-623-MYIE.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hello, I'm Dr. Wanda Franz, president of National Right to Life. As a mother of three and a developmental psychologist, I know that adolescents need their parents' guidance in making wise decisions. Yet pro-abortion advocates insist that parents do not have the right to be involved in their minor daughter's abortion decision. We at National Right to Life need your help. Visit our website at www.nrlc.org. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life.
Creationists, are they unfit to be doctors? Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Bible Upholding Ministry of Answers in Genesis.
Well, some of our evolutionist opponents do say some rather ugly things about those of us who believe in the biblical account of creation. For example, a college professor in Texas indicated that creationists are unfit to be medical doctors. Now, his school, Texas Tech University, even supported him. On the school's website, he said he won't give letters of recommendation to any student entering medical school unless they first believe humans evolved from other life forms. You see, he believes that since evolution is the central unifying principle of biology, as he states, someone who rejects evolution can't be a good doctor. You see, this professor says creationists commit malpractice because, quote, good scientists would never throw out data that don't conform to their expectations or beliefs. And yet he later writes about, quote, the fact of human evolution, even if all the details are not yet known, end of quote. My good friend Dr. David Menton of our staff, who taught for more than 30 years at a well-known medical school, has debunked the claim that doctors must believe in evolution. There's no medical discovery that depends on evolution.
Many times we'll get that accusation that there are no real scientists who believe in creation, but we'd like you to hear an interview between Ken Ham and our astronomer Dr. Jason Lyle. For your gift of any size, we'll send you this audio CD after you call toll-free 1-888-89-ANSWERS.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. This Thursday, the 30th of October, we're talking Halloween with Gretchen Pasentino. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Questions or comments on Halloween Are you participating in it? If so, why so? If not, why not? 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE. Well, Gretchen, you said before that it was not Satan's Day, but someone will counter by saying, oh, but it is a Satanist holiday. Perhaps it's even the biggest holiday among the Satanists. Is this true?
Well, no, it's not really true. The word Halloween actually means the holy evening, and it is the beginning of the celebration of All Saints' Day, which is a decidedly Christian day, a day in the church year when Christians around the world for many centuries have set aside special time to thank God for the exemplary heroes of the faith who have gone before us. When we think of people who have been persecuted for their faith, some of them even tortured in their faith, those who have stood strong and preached the gospel no matter what the obstacles, it gives us a strengthening of our faith too. And that's what All Saints Day is meant to do. All Saints Day is celebrated from sundown on October 31st until sundown on November 1st. This is also the day that Martin Luther chose as the fitting time for him to stand with those heroes of the faith to against the errors that had crept into the church of his day. And that's become known now also as Reformation Day. It was the day that he nailed his 95 theses, or challenges against ungodliness in the church of his day, to the door in Wittenberg, which began the discussions and the controversies that ended up in the Protestant Reformation. So it is not Satan's Day. There are Satanists, although they are very few, and most contemporary Satanists do not believe that there is an evil spiritual being who exists to whom they have sold their souls, not that they own their souls and are able to sell them anyway. In fact, most contemporary Satanists do not believe supernatural at all. They don't believe that the evil spirit, the devil, or Satan exists, and they don't even believe God exists. Instead, they worship themselves. They have a religion, if you want to call it that, of self-gratification, self-worship, of egoism. And they choose to call themselves Satanists because they see themselves as the complete antithetical position from Christianity. People don't understand what Christianity is really about. They think that we are a religion of poor, pathetic, sniveling, slave minded people who grovel in front of a mean dictatorial God and beg him to have mercy on us and not torture us, the sadist that he really is. And they don't want to be like that. So they call themselves the anti of Christianity, which would be Satanists. So really, if you were a typical contemporary Satanist, you would not consider Halloween or any other day determined by anybody else as the most important day for your celebration. You probably choose your own birthday. After all, you're the center of your own universe and the center of your own worship.
But what about paganism, neo-paganism, and in particular Wicca? Is Halloween special to any of these pagan religions?
Yes, Halloween is, although actually the neo-pagans, the Wiccans, the witches, there are various terms for those who have invented kind of a contemporary recreation of ancient non-Christian Western European religions. But they're not even really accurate about it, because whether they're referring to Samhain, or which printed out looks like Samhain, or other kinds of ancient pagan celebrations, they weren't necessarily on October 31st. They certainly weren't on All Saints Day, because they preceded the advent of Christianity in those areas. But they were harvest and end-of-the-year celebrations, and they were focused primarily on a pagan understanding of death, the afterlife, and the judgment of God. In that pagan understanding, death was something to be feared, the afterlife was something to be negotiated for, and the gods and the goddesses were capricious. You wouldn't necessarily know whether they were going to treat you well or badly. You might, in fact, have to buy your way into a profitable or non-tortured afterlife. And so a lot of habits and practices that coincided with the end of the vegetation cycle, the end of the weather cycle, the end of the long days and the beginning of the short days, had to do with these false ideas of fearing death, fearing the gods, fearing life after death. When Christianity came to Western Europe, the Christian missionaries saw that fear, saw that very crippling attitude about God, death, and life after death, and they saw it as an opportunity to bring the good news of the gospel. Death is actually the liberation from this death-doomed, corrupted, sin-marred body, and the preparation for the bodily resurrection. Death is the beginning of life after death, being present in the perfect and loving presence of God between the death of this body and the resurrection of our new. God can't be bought off. He can't be tricked. He can't be paid to give us a good life after death. In fact, he paid the ultimate price in his Son, Jesus Christ. When we believe in Jesus, then we can be guaranteed that what awaits us after death is not fear and doom, but eternal life. That's the message the Christians brought to the pagans, and it's that message that overtook and replaced the practices of fear and capitulation to the gods and goddesses that the pagans practiced.
Where did the kind of trappings of Halloween come from, the whole idea of dressing up as either mythical or kind of the undead, the witches, things like this? Where did this come from, along with this kind of curious idea of sending our kids door to door for candy?
Well, some people will give you very dogmatic, very confident answers, as though they've got some book that's got the answers there from many, many centuries ago, going back 1,500 years or more. I'm not going to be that confident about it, because most of the pagan religions and pagan practices were never written down. So we're doing some guessing based on artifacts that we found, based on trying to trace back the origins of folk tales and mythology. But in general, with those understandings of death, life, and the capricious or sadistic gods and goddesses, we can guess and you know, be pretty sure that among the pagans was the belief that if you died, you had to pay your way into a good existence after death. You did that by good works in this lifetime and obedience to the gods and goddesses, including offering them sacrifices and supporting the temples and the priests. But your families also did that for you after your death. If your families did not give the proper offerings, the proper worship, the proper obedience to the gods and goddesses, especially the God of the afterlife, then you were either barred from the afterlife altogether, or you had a miserable existence. Well, nobody wanted to face death with that prospect. And so the tradition came about that if your family did not properly prepare you for the afterlife, then you would go back and you would haunt them until they properly took care of it and paid your way into existence after death. So if you treated the God of the underworld properly, then you wouldn't be tricked by the spirit of your dead relative. The idea of dressing up, wearing costumes, was either an imitation of those loved ones who had died and were no longer walking on this earth today, or as a disguise, a camouflage, if you hadn't properly prepared your loved one for a blissful afterlife, and if he were going to come and try to find you to trick you. If you disguised yourself, maybe he wouldn't be able to identify you and wouldn't be able to trick you. Again, we're guessing at some of this, although we can kind of dig it out of some of the artifacts that we've discovered and some of the traditions and legends and myths. But whatever those practices involved, as they survive to us today, I know of practically no children or even adults who dress up for Halloween because they think they're hiding from their dead relatives, or who hand out candy on Halloween because they think they are preparing dead souls to enjoy the afterlife. Today, when people dress up and participate in trick-or-treating or bobbing for apples or carving jack-o'-lanterns or something like that, they're just having fun. They're enjoying games. They're pretending for a little while. As you said at the opening of the program, you just thought it was a great way to have fun in the neighborhood and maybe rot your teeth with some candy.
Gretchen Pasentino is our guest. It's Thursday afternoon, October the 30th. What do you think? Should Christians participate in Halloween activities? Give us a call now, 10 minutes on the other side with Gretchen, talking Halloween, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Gretchen Pasentino is our guest, co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California, co-author of an article titled, What About Halloween? You can read this article on the web at our homepage, issuesetc.org, under the On Demand link. Issuesetc.org and click On Demand. You'll find this article, What About Halloween? Gretchen, we got about 30 seconds before this break. Does it surprise you that in our age of kind of rising atheism or none of the above-ism, that people, perfectly rational people, are buying into some of the ideas of the occult and the supernatural that seem to be at least the popular lore of Halloween? About 30 seconds.
No, it doesn't surprise me. People are afraid of what they don't know about, and when people guarded the truth of the gospel because they've been told that it is valueless, that it's untrue, that it's just make-believe, they still have that yearning inside for spiritual reality and spiritual significance. In the trappings of Halloween, in the artifacts of the New Age movement, in the many superstitious beliefs that you might see on Oprah with Eckhart Tolle and his vision of a new world, all those kinds of things offer a spirituality without personal relationship. No wonder it appeals to people, but it's not the truth.
Gretchen Passantino is our guest. We'll talk Halloween for another 10 minutes after this.
They did the mash. They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Issues Etc., Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand Audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand Audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand Audio.
The sharpest arrow in your apologetics quiver. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Book reveals the pain of abortion.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
In her book, Motherhood Interrupted, author Jane Brennan portrays the pain experienced by post-abortive women. Having gone through this pain personally, Brennan hopes she can help women by allowing them to tell their stories and reconcile unresolved feelings of grief and loss. As one testimonial said, "I will always regret my decision to end the lives of my babies. However, as much as I would like to, I can't erase what's been done. All I can do is share my experiences with others who may be in a similar situation, hopefully persuading them to choose life." The book is Motherhood Interrupted by Jane Brennan.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Talk about Halloween. Gretchen Passantino is our guest, co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California, co-author of an article titled, What About Halloween? 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or email us talkback at issuesetc.org. This email comes from Keith in North Platte, Nebraska. He says, it seems at its most fundamental level, Halloween, as practiced in America, can be seen from a Christian perspective as wrong. He says, a knock is heard at the door is answered, and the chant trick-or-treat is sounded out. This means that if the homeowner does not provide the visiting monsters with a treat, he will suffer the consequences, some sort of trick such as soaped windows, toilet paper streaming from the hedges in his yard. Though mild, writes Keith, this amounts to nothing less than extortion. Trick-or-treat is nothing less than a threat. fun for ghosts and trolls, reaping a bag full of extorted candy perhaps, but not reconcilable with Christianity, and it seems not a good practice to promote among Christian children. Your thoughts there, Gretchen?
Well, certainly the things that he described are not things that we would want to teach our children as we teach them to have good Christian moral characters. But that's not what I taught my children. I doubt that that's what you experienced from your mother when you were growing up in Texas. I was taught that it was a fun time when I could go around to my neighbors and they would, with, you know, full knowledge and agreement, be happy to bless me with a little bit of candy in exchange for seeing my little costume and have me say trick or treat and please and thank you. Now, there are many ways people can choose to celebrate Halloween that don't involve going door to door, that don't involve candy, that don't involve making threats or following through with revenge. I do think it's important that each Christian be persuaded in his or her own mind about what their conscience will allow them to do in not compromising with the unchristian or even the anti-Christian elements that can be associated with Halloween. Certainly, Keith or anybody else can choose to refrain from anything to do with it altogether. But I know when people come to my door and I'm able to hand them a piece of candy and a gospel tract, and when I make sure that they say please before I give them the candy and thank you after I give it to them, and when the teenagers come around later with their grocery sacks and no costumes and bad attitudes and I say, sorry, nothing for you, you need to grow up, I think that those are small teachable moments. They may be very small, they may not go very far, but they're an opportunity for us to promote the good rather than celebrating the bad.
What do you make of, there have been many attempts on the part of Christians to try and offer alternatives, and two have kind of come to the fore. One of them seems to dominate a little bit more. One is a Christian haunted house, which is essentially, let's just give them the plain old haunted house with the werewolf and the vampire and the ghouls and the zombies and the mummies, and then we'll maybe give them a little gospel literature or something at the end. The other one is the so-called hell house, where it strikes me, It is intended to be as shocking or as terrifying for a different purpose than any high-tech haunted house from a kind of purely secular perspective would be, all in the name of witnessing to people. What are your thoughts there?
I'm not really satisfied with either approach. I think in the first case, we're associating All Saints Day and the truth of what the Bible tells us about death, life after death, the resurrection, and God's eternal kingdom. We're associating those true things with things that are imaginary and false, goblins and werewolves and haunted houses and things like that. I'm not real comfortable with making that comparison. It's almost like saying believing in Jesus is like believing in Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. That's what the atheists accuse us of. I would go much farther than some of those groups and do something completely positive and not compromising. Maybe have a harvest festival. Maybe have a Reformation party. Celebrate some of those heroes of the faith throughout the centuries with costumes of those Christian martyrs. The hell houses, on the other hand, I'm not real satisfied with that either, because I think they're taking an emotional manipulation attitude, using it for a good end, yeah, scare you into hell. But, you know, as much as Jesus talked about the fact that eternal punishment is real and is the absolute destiny for those who reject his gospel, what is overarching in the story of the gospel, the story of redemption, is not God's anger and wrath against the godless, but God's love and mercy towards us, even while we are sinners. I don't think we need to be scared into believing the truth. I think we need to be loved by God. Romans 1:1-5 is one of my favorite passages in all of Scripture. And in that passage, Paul reminds us that while we were still sinners, God loved us so much that he sent his son to die for us. That's the good news. John repeats that, of course, in John 3:16 that we all know. God loved the world so much that he sent his only begotten son. It is the love of God for us, exemplified in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, that redeems us from our sin, provides us with forgiveness, regenerates us, and renews us so that we can have everlasting life with him.
Andy's listening in Kirkwood, Missouri, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Todd. I'm responding to the fellow that thought of Halloween trick-or-treating as extortion. I don't know what they do in other parts of the country. I grew up in the St. Louis area back in the 1950s, and when we rang a doorbell and said trick-or-treat, the response from the person opening the door is, well, what's your trick? And then each of us had to tell a joke or sing a song or something, and then we got our treats. So that made it a different thing. It also slowed things down. You didn't get near as much tooth decay because you didn't get near as much candy.
Andy, thank you very much. Gretchen, your thoughts?
I think that's a great idea, and I've heard that in other places too. Where I grew up, where I spent my childhood in upstate New York, there were some people who actually did some mildly destructive things to other people. But they were the bad kids. They were the ones that the parents in the neighborhood pointed to as, if you don't watch up, you're going to grow up like them. They were not people that we respected, and what they did not encourage us to be like that. Far more common was the relationship that we had with the families in the neighborhood, where they were delighted to see our creative homemade costumes, and we were delighted to receive the homemade cookies or the caramel apples or other things that I'm sure today people would talk about having them pull out your teeth or sticking a razor blade in it. But in those days, it was good-natured family and neighborhood fun.
Finally then, Gretchen, with only a minute, can Christians bind consciences of fellow Christians when it comes to the practice of participation in Halloween activities?
I think it's possible for us as individual Christians to have a great conviction that this is an opportunity to stand up for the gospel, to reach out for people in a way that they're going to be open to and receptive to, or we can look at it as a time when we are going to stand apart from the holiday and testimony by our non-involvement. Our conscience needs to tell us which we're going to do. This is one of those gray areas, one of those things that's a matter of conscience rather than a matter of a clear-cut do this or don't do this. The underlying principle that never changes is that Jesus Christ is to be praised and everything else is to be forgotten.
You can read Gretchen Passantino's article, What About Halloween, on our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Gretchen Passantino is co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California. She's co-authored the article, What About Halloween? Gretchen, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you so much, and may you have a blessed All Saints Day, All Souls Day the next day, and Reformation Week.
Thank you. Well, tomorrow on the program, for the day celebrating the Reformation, we're going to be studying the Great Reformation hymn, A Mighty Fortress, Dr. Arthur Jess, going through it stanza by stanza, listening to the hymn and mining it for all of the scriptural truth it brings so beautifully forth, a hymn of comfort, not so much the battle hymn of the Reformation, but a hymn of great comfort to those who live in the shadow of the cross and whose only hope is in God, who ultimately conquers death in his Son Jesus Christ's death on the cross and resurrection. See, this is really the guiding star of the Christian mind when it comes to things that the world offers by way of entertainment or diversion or amusement. This is really the guiding star, the guiding principle that one must keep in mind. In a world that seems to be dominated or ruled by death, where apart from God, we would be subject and fearful of all of the things death encroaching upon us in this life and what follows after this life in death, apart from God and his conquering of death in Jesus Christ. The truth of Christ's dominion over death, that death that once held him briefly in the tomb could not hold him permanently, but he rose from the dead, and therefore Scripture tells us death no longer has dominion over him. And if death no longer has dominion over him, then it no longer has dominion over us. That which Adam wrought by his sin, which brought death into the world through sin, Christ has overcome by taking sin in his body, taking our death at the cross, and rising again on the third day. It changes the way you think about the entertainments and the diversions and the amusements of this life, even things like Halloween. Maybe you don't take him so seriously. Maybe you see that through all of it, Christ remains victor over death. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.